Ladies and gentlemen, l'chaim. L'chaim, l'chaim. It's just coffee. Scripted in the stars. What's going on here? So we're learning the Gemara, the Masechet Megillah. This is going to be a page turner. We're going to go from side B of the sixth folio page of Gemara. We're going to go to Be'ezrat Hashem, Daf Zayin, side page 7, side A. And by means of just a very brief recapitulation, so everybody can kind of be on the same page. In the previous two episodes, we have elaborated on the idea of a Jewish leap year. Simply stated, Jewish months are lunar. The lunar month, the lunar cycle, is 29 and a half days. The solar orbit or cycle creates the seasonal year, the times that we're closer to the sun or further from the sun. And that orbit takes place over 365 days. Now, if you do 12 times 29 and a half, you could end up with 354. Which means we have a discrepancy of 11 and a half days. And this is a problem. It's not just 11 and a half days, it's then a bunch of hours and some other jagged parts. So, if you don't do something to fix the calendar, your calendar is going to quickly fall out of season. Over the course of only 2 years, you will be almost 24 days behind. Right? 11 and a half days almost. And then, you know, before you know it, you have what the Chinese New Year has. It's always happening in a different month. Or what happens in the Muslim calendar, Ramadan, is always being celebrated in a different time of the year. That's no good for Jewish people. Why not? Because Hashem says to us that the first month, which is Nisan, has to be seasonal. We always have to celebrate Pesach in the spring. And if you don't have some way to fix your calendar, it's not going to work. You'll say, well, no problem. Just add on like a short month at the end of the year. Yeah, that doesn't really work. Because you need lunar months when the moon reappears, and then when the moon grows, waxes, and then wanes and disappears, and then reappears. That's how you have months. You can't ask the sun to do a quick little, 11 and a half day, just quick turnaround. Doesn't work. Some months will be 30 days. Some months will be 29 days. And there's a very sophisticated system in place. Once upon a time, the calendar was dynamic, and that meant that two witnesses would see the reappearance of the moon somewhere near Jerusalem. They would make their way to the holy city of Yerushalayim. They would offer testimony, and the courts would decide that this was accurate, and they would say, Mekudesh, HaChodesh, Mekudesh. The new month is now sanctified. So some months had 29 days, some months had 30 days. The courts knew when the moon might be able to be seen or not. And that depends on a whole lot of things, including where the planetary bodies are in the heavens and above Jerusalem and what kind of during what time of the year. So it depends on a lot of things. They would know if it's possible for the moon to be seen or not, because otherwise, if people would imagine they saw something, and then the Bezin would accept their testimony. And eventually, we would have 30 days and 30 days and 30 days, and everything will be out of whack. Or 29 days and 29 days and 29 days, things would be out of whack again. Which means that the courts had to fix Rosh Chodesh sometimes, even if nobody came. So, well, last month we had 29 days. This month we have 29 days. Next thing you know, the moon is going to be reappearing on the 26th day of the month. That's not going to work either. So there was a very, very carefully calibrated system. And when we have to justify the discrepancy between the solar or seasonal year and the lunar year, we don't add 11 and a half days. We add a month, not 28 days. So that's in the secular calendar. This year is a leap year, which means an extra day. But that's basically a seasonal calendar. And even the seasonal calendar has to be fixed because you're missing hours. And the Gregorian calendar once needed a major overhaul. But if you don't really care where the moon is at the time when you're doing this, you can do whatever you want. You play whatever game you want. But if you're going to begin months and end months by virtue of the lunar cycle, then you can't play those games because nobody has the ability to control the moon. So that's why when the Gregorian calendar was overhauled, then we have the Orthodox, like Russian Orthodox and Greek Orthodox, that says, no, we're not accepting that. We don't change anything. Yeah, but your calendar's out of whack. We don't care if it's out of whack. We're still going to do the same old thing. So they celebrate their holidays something like, 15 or 17 days later, because they're still on the old calendar, which doesn't really work for a number of reasons. So what we do is we intercalate an additional month. This year, the year we happen to be in, is one of those years. It's called a Shnat HaIbur, a leap year, or a pregnant year, and it has not an extra 11 days or 2 weeks or an extra day. It has a full extra month. When do we add that month? When we need to. What has to be seasonal? Pesach has to be seasonal. So we need to push off Rosh Chodesh Nisan. And so, once upon a time, dynamically, they would make a decision. We're going to make the next month Adar Sheni, a second Adar, or some years they'd know to begin with, this is going to have to be a leap year. For about 17 centuries or so, our calendar has been in place. Our calendar's in place because we don't have a Sanhedrin. The Sanhedrin disbanded. And the only way for us to be able to have a Jewish calendar, which means for us to be able to have holidays and festivals, and a whole lot of mitzvahs, is by virtue of the calendar, which was set in place by the last Sanhedrin and the minor Hillel HaKotan.
Question, every year we're missing 11 and a half.
We're always going to be missing something.
So why not just add one day to each month?
Because if you just add one day to each month, then you're going to have some months in which the moon is going to reappear in the wrong time of the month. And that's not going to be good either. If you have 30 days and then 30 days and then 30 days, then after a few months, you're going to end up with the moon reappearing on the 26th day of the last month. So it's again, it's not a lunar month. Very complicated. Very complicated. Really is. For our purposes, what we need to know is that if you're going to have two Adars, you're going to have halachic questions. Why? Because Adar is a unique month with halachic responsibility and obligation. Now, the month of, for example, Tevet, what day Rosh Chodesh is, it doesn't make that much of a difference. The difference would make is when do we fast on the 10th day of Tevet. That's the only halachic day of the month where there's a specific observance. If it would be the month of Shavat, we'd have a difficulty or a challenge or an issue. Where are we going to place Rosh Hashanah le'ilanot? But again, those are not major observances. Adar, the last month of the year, happens to have an enormous amount of ritual and observance because it's Purim. And Purim has a Megillah reading, two Megillah readings to be precise. And Purim has other mitzvahs that are associated with it, like feasting and gifts to the poor and gifts of food kinds. And then there are special portions of the Torah, which we talked about in the previous episode, that are always read during the month of Adar. And where does all this go? The first Adar or the second Adar? As you might have guessed, there is not a widespread agreement. We have a number of different opinions. And all of them are Torah opinions, but of course the halacha has to be ruled a specific way. And the fact that there are other opinions also has bearing on the halacha in some way, shape, or form as well. And perhaps we will elaborate more on those details as we move forward in this Gemara. But at this point, what we are going to do is look at the two major divergent schools of thought. And we are going to try to source this. What is the reason for their different ways of looking at things? Why does one opinion say the first Adar, that's the primary one, Purim should be celebrated in Adar HaRishon? And the second opinion says, no. Purim should be celebrated in Adar Sheni, in the second Adar. And the first Adar is not the real Adar. So we want to know, will the real Adar please rise? And they're fighting about it. We have these different opinions. So the Gemara, which is wont to delving into the jurisprudence and the legal theory and theology of why we come to rulings, is going to be analyzing the origin of all this. Of course, the halacha is lifted out of it, but we're not learning the code of Jewish law now. Now we're learning the Gemara. So that's a bit of a preface. And those who have been with us all along might have found this somewhat repetitious, and those who haven't been joining us might find this a little still deficient, right? You don't fully grasp it all, but okay. This is the compromise we're going to make. We'll leave it at that. And those who are joining us for the first time, L'chaim, welcome. And please go back and watch the previous episodes. There are only two of them. It's not so hard to catch up to the series. So far, that is. Omar Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yochanan says, Vishnehem, both of these different opinions. The opinion of Rabbi Eliezer ben Rabbi Yossi, who I believe is Rabbi Yossi Aglili, and the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, who is the Sion of the house of Hillel, both of these opinions, we want to understand the reason for the divergence. So Rabbi Yochanan says, first of all, you have to know Amar Rabbi Chiya bar Avin, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hilchasa, the halacha is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. If you want to know what the halacha is that the second Adar is the main Adar, and Purim, as we know it, is celebrated in the second, not the first Adar. Okay. Now that we have the ruling, we want to understand what is behind this. Vishnehem, both of these divergent opinions, Mikra Echad Darshu, they both elaborate on, they both expound the same verse, which is very odd. It's very odd that they should each understand the same verse entirely differently. What verse is that? The verse is found in the ninth chapter of the Megillah. About midway through the ninth chapter, we start to talk about the establishment of the holiday of Purim. The miracle has been fully narrated. Now Mordechai and Esther are writing letters and communicating with the diverse Jewish world. I say diverse geographically because they were all on the same page religiously at this point. Everybody came home. It was many, many assimilated Jews and many lost Jews. They all came home. The story of Purim brought every Jew home. Now that everybody's home, Mordechai says, here is what we are going to do to commemorate this holiday of rejuvenation, of salvation and rejuvenation. We're going to read the Megillah, and we're going to give gifts to the poor, and we're going to give gifts of food to each other or exchange each other's meals so everybody has a Purim meal, and we are going to have a feast, a celebration like no other. So Mordechai sends this out to the Jewish people, and he says, I want you, l'kayim aleihem, to fulfill this 14th day as well as the 15th day, which is in Shushan, or walled cities in Eretz Yisrael. And he says the words, B'chol shana v'shana. I want you to do this annually. This is an annual thing, an annual celebration. We're not celebrating now. We're going to celebrate this year and next year and the year after that and in all years that will follow until the end of time and beyond. And he says, B'chol shana v'shana. So the Gemara now introduces us to the reasoning of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Shimon. He holds Savar. What is the meaning of B'chol Shana V'Shana? Why does it have to say in the Megillah, Mordechai said, I want you to do this every year? Why doesn't he simply say, I want you to do this Le'olam? Le'olam means forever. Forever. And forever is a very long time. So why do you have to say each and every single year? Say forever. Ma b'chol shana v'shana. What's every year? So says Rabbi Eliezer b'Rabbi Yossi. Ma kol shana v'shana. Odor hasamach l'shvat. On an annual basis, every year, what month does Adar follow? Shvat. So he says, in the month after Shvat, we celebrate Purim. And it's actually that simple. Afkan, Adar HaSamach L'Shvat. In other words, how would it be possible to celebrate Purim in uniformity? whether it's a leap year or whether it's not a leap year. How can you celebrate Purim uniformly? What's the answer? You always celebrate it the month after Shvat. If it's always the month after Shvat, you're always going to be celebrating Purim the same time. A month after Rosh Hashanah Le'ilanot, we're busy reading the Megillah. Simple as that. It says, B'chol Shana V'Shana, as if to indicate that this is an annual thing celebrated in like fashion each and every single year. So therefore, it should be read in the first Adar. This is the reasoning, the logic of Rabbi Yossi Reb Eliezer, and that's how he understands the words of Mordechai, B'chol Shana V'Shana. Okay, it sounds pretty logical. So the Gemara says, well, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel also sounds logical. He savar, he holds, b'chol shana v'shana, annually, every single year, makol shana v'shana adar ha-samach l'nisan, every single year, when do we celebrate Purim? A month before Pesach. No problem. He says, same here, a month before Pesach. A month before Pesach. In my childhood memories, I remember every year Purim, all kinds of nash. And then it's like, it's soon going to be Pesach. We have to eat everything now. I was like so excited. We can have a whole pantry full of stuff. I don't remember my parents selling the chametz. And like, well, I remember like, we have to eat it. Pesach is coming. So it's like, it was like 3 weeks of gorging on all kinds of unhealthy sweet stuff because Pesach is coming. That's how Purim is. Purim is always before Pesach. So the Gemara says, you know, thank you very much for this explanation, but you haven't really explained anything to me. He came along and just said, you have to do it the same every year. Well, not every year is the same. So Rabbi Eliezer says, of course it's the same. A month after Shvat. That's how it's the same. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, exactly the same as every year, a month before Pesach. But they're 30 days apart. One is talking about Adar Rishon, and one is talking about Adar Sheni. So which one is it? So the Gemara says, okay, I don't understand this. Let's try to go through this. Let's return here. Bishleim Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi. Why does Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi say that you have to do it the month after Shvat? Mistaver Taima. It makes sense. And this reason it makes sense is Ein ma'avirin al ha-mitzvot. You don't pass over a mitzvah. Don't pass over a mitzvah. A mitzvah presents itself, seize the moment. You get to the next mitzvah, you do the next mitzvah. So, Adar is here. Read the Megillah. You should read it in the first Adar. That's what Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Simbiosi says. It makes perfect sense. Eim avinu ala mitzvahs. And the Gemara seems to understand Rabbi Eliezer's opinion in a very obvious way. It makes perfect sense. Eim avinu. The question, though, is why is Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel arguing? Why does he see otherwise? Let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says, Eim avinu. He says, when something comes to your hands, you have an opportunity. Agdim la'asot. First thing is action. Hit the iron when it's hot. You got a mitzvah, do it. Don't make calculations. And here Rashi says, the hochi tanya. This is what we learned. Now the word tanya indicates that this is teaching of the genre of our sages. However, it is not a Mishnah. Where do we learn this? Says Rashi, we learned it in the Mechilta. Are you going to ask me what the Mechilta is? Oh, I'm so happy you asked, yeah. So, the Mechilta is referred to as Medrash Halacha. So it has expositions on the verses of the Torah. We are Doresh, we investigate and offer homiletic interpretations on the words of the Torah. However, it's filled with practical instruction. It's called Medrash Halacha. And the book of Mechilta accompanies the first two books of the Bible, the first two books of the Chumash, which are known as Bereshit and Shemot. So the Medrash Halacha of Bereshit and Shemot are called Mechilta. The book of Leviticus, Vayikra, has a special compilation of Medrash Halacha. It's called Safra, also known as Torat Kohanim. And then the last two books of the Torah have their own book of Medrash Halacha, which is called Sifri. So Mechilta, Safra, Sifri. Try to remember that. We have Mishnah. That's simple case halacha. Every Mishnah is, this is the case, here's the ruling. Sometimes there are multiple opinions about the ruling. And then we have the Medrash Halacha, which is of the same genre. It's the same teachers of Torah. And they are known as Tanaim. The Tanaim are the ones who formulated the Mechilta, Safra, and Sifri. Incidentally, the Zohar is also of that same genre. And then there are something called Toseftas. Toseftas are the codicils of all of the tractates of Talmud, which are Mishnah-like, but were not inducted into the Mishnah for a variety of reasons, and are usually used when we learn the Gemara, which is from the next era, where we analyze the Mishnah to try and understand what's found in the Mishnah. What the Gemara will do is delve deeply into the words of the Mishnah, often by contrasting the words of the Mishnah with the words of a Braisa. That's what Tosefta is called, Braisa. Now you have to understand that the Mishnaic genre of teaching is, once that becomes set, it's set in stone, and later generations cannot argue. The Gemara can't argue with the Mishnah. The Mishnah becomes, it hardens, that's it. This is the tradition. This is the oral tradition. The Mishnah is a Mishnah. We have a question over here. Yitzi wants to know about Taos and films like Mavir Nala Mitzvah. Yitzi, fantastic comment / question. Hold that thought. We will come back to that. Very good. L'chaim. So, Rashi says, the Mechilta tells us, Ushmartem es hamatzot. You should guard the matzah. Why should you guard the matzah? What happens if you don't guard the matzah? Somebody's going to steal it. This is not like steal the salami. You have to guard the matzah, because matzah left to its own devices, if it isn't baked yet, will turn into chametz. Of all the mitzvot in the Torah, the only thing which, if left to its own devices, will necessarily become a terrible thing is dough. And therefore we have all kinds of stringencies in halachot about how we deal with matzah. We pound it, then we move it, then we act with tremendous alacrity and swiftness because we've got to bake it. Because once that chemical begins, the chemical process, it starts to expand and it starts to rise, and we have to kill the fermentation dead in its tracks. How do you kill the fermentation? How do you kill that process? The extreme heat. Yes, it's called baking. That is correct. So you bake it and boom, it arrests the development. There is another way. That's to freeze it. But that could have to be flash frozen. And then the moment it starts to thaw, boom, it comes right back to life. So that's a very bad idea to freeze things before Pesach. What we do is we bake it in a boiling hot oven very, very quickly. Ushmartem es hamatzos. Watch the matzah. The Gemara talks about making one matzah at a time even for people who don't have a matzah bakery, because you got to guard it. So that's what the Torah says. Ushmartem es hamatzot. And the Mechilta tells us, in Ba Mitzvah Liyodcha, Al Tach Mitzano. If a mitzvah comes to your hand, don't let the opportunity ferment. Don't ruin the opportunity. Now, I want to share with you the original Mechilta here, but this is really interesting for us to understand that this is a teaching of the genre of our sages. And it seems to be an exposition of the words of the Torah itself. And if it's an exposition of the words of the Torah itself, is it possible not to accept this? How could we even have two different opinions? Like, what is going on in the Gemara? So the Mechilta is found in chapter 12 of the book of Exodus, in Kapitel Yud Beis, Pasuk Yud Zayin, which in the Mechilta chapter ends up being subsection 63. And it says like this, Ushmartem es hamatzot, Rabbi Yashia Omar, Al Tikra Kain. Don't read it, watch or guard the matzah. Don't read it like that. Ella, rather, Ushmartem es a mitzvot. Watch the mitzvot. Watch the commandments. Meaning, kederech she'ein machmitzin et hamatzah, in the same way you know that if you allow time to elapse, you might lose the matzah, because once matzah becomes chometz, it can't go back. You can't turn chometz into matzah, no matter how hard you try. Same with the mitzvah. You lose the mitzvah, it's lost. Don't let the chametz, the mitzvah, pass you by. Ella ba mitzvah liyadcha, asay oto miyad. A mitzvah comes your way, boom, do it right away. How did they say? Never put off for tomorrow what you can do today. And there's a variety of reasons for this. Who says there'll be a tomorrow? How do you know you have another opportunity? Or this is how you have to value and revere a mitzvah. But without going into the logic of what this means, the way the Malbim in his commentary on Torah HaMitzvah explains that there are two opinions is what this means. The first opinion is that you have to guard the matzah, and we have specific instructions on the matzah. And then Rav Yashia is saying, no, it's not just the matzah. So the Malbim says that as he understands this Mechilta, it's actually two different opinions. The question is the Torah saying guard the matzah, because matzah, if left alone to its own devices, becomes chametz, or is the Torah really saying guard all the mitzvahs? Matzah is just the poster boy, the Pillsbury doughboy of the matzah, of the mitzvahs. And he's the poster boy of mitzvahs, telling you in general, a matzah, just like you understand with matzah, that matzah could rise, so it is, every opportunity can rise and disappear. You got to grab the mitzvah when it comes. So look, here's the obvious question. I don't understand what's going on over here. What's the reason of Rabbi Yossi b'Rabbi Eliezer? The reason is because it says b'chol shana v'shana, every single year. Right? He says, yeah, annually, every year. So therefore it has to be the first Adar. And then we have the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, that's right, year after year, annually. And what does that mean? That means it's going to be on the month before Nisan. Okay, so this actually did nothing for us. It was like blinking in the dark. Both opinions were saying whatever, they came to the same, so to speak, decision based on the same verse in totally different ways. So the verse didn't really tell them anything. If ultimately it boils down to e machmitzin et hamitzvot, don't let the mitzvah pass you by, or e ma'avirin al mitzvot, then the Gemara should have said that. What is the reason of Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi? And the Gemara should have said, yaha, you want to know why he says the first Adar? Because e ma'avirin al mitzvot, you don't pass by mitzvahs. That's why. That's why. So, what's going on over here? You say a business with shana shana, year after year. And then, in any way, the Gemara still is not happy because it doesn't really explain anything. So the Sfasemes, there's a Turi oven on this, but I'm going to go tell you what the Sfasemes, he asked this question very clearly. He says, L'chayda kosher. Kivin the sphere of the Rebbe Yossi, ima vidal ala mitzvahs. So the Sfasemes says, so lama lidrash the chol shana v'shana. Who needs this exposition of year after year, annually? Who needs the exposition of annually? It doesn't do anything for you. It doesn't explain anything to you. It didn't answer the question. And the Sfasemes gives us a fascinating answer. He talks about what the Turi Oven says, but he says he has issues with it. I'm going to go tell you what he says. He says, Lafi ani as daiti meikara lekosher midi. There's no question here. Why? He says, because without the exposition of b'chol shana v'shana, so the whole business of not allowing mitzvahs to pass us by or not pass us by, it doesn't even begin. Like, how do we know how to do this? Maybe you're supposed to have two Purims. Two Adars, two Purims. who decided that you do one or the other? Maybe a regular year you do one Purim, because the 14th of Adar is Purim. And in a leap year, whoa, we got two Purims. You know, if we had two Kislevs, we'd have two Hanukkahs, maybe. Two Nisans, we'd have two Pesachs. Why not? It's not a question of a Mavirin, it's a question of not passing over. Who says the first or the second? Who says it's one or the other? He says the first thing we have to understand is that there is an annual mitzvah that has to be performed. And the mitzvah is performed uniformly. Every year there's one day called Purim and one day called Shushan Purim. And that's it. We don't have two Purims. Shana, Shana. We know that this is the month of Adar. Adar was always the month of the leap year from the time of Moshe Rabbeinu. Whether they called it Adar or the 12th month, that was always when there was going to be a leap year. So we knew that. Mordechai knew that. And Mordechai sent out a message, the 14th of Adar is going to be celebrated. Which 14th of Adar? The 14th of Adar. Which one? Maybe both. Incidentally, what do people do if they have yahrzeit? If they lose a loved one in the month of Adar? When did it say Kaddish? When you get a leap year? Did it say Kaddish in the first Adar or in the second Adar? So first of all, this is a big dispute. It's not even so simple. In the Sephardic community, many, many communities, they observe the second Adar. Because they said the halacha is Purim's in the second Adar. That's what the Yahrzeit is also. In the Ashkenazi community, the ruling is that we observe the Yahrzeit in the first Adar. Why? Because there's another issue, and that is forgetting our loved ones. And there's this concept that if 12 months go by without mentioning something or somebody, they become forgotten. So we don't want 12 months to go by. However, that's only going to help us for Adar Rishon. What about the next year? So guess what we do? You say Kaddish twice. A person who has Yahrzeit and Adar, unless their loved one died on Adar Rishon or Adar Sheni, if they died in a regular year, what day do they celebrate as the Yahrzeit? The answer is they got two Yahrzeits. The same with Bar Mitzvah. Ask yourself that question, Yitzi. Now ask yourself, how could you have a Bar Mitzvah twice? You're either Bar Mitzvah or you're not Bar Mitzvah. So the halacha is that birthdays always go to the second Adar, unless you're born in the first Adar. And it turns out really interesting because suppose somebody is born in the second day of Adar Sheni, and the other person was born on the 20th day of Adar Rishon, so they're 12 days apart. But on the year of their Bar Mitzvah, it's a regular year. So the boy who's 12 days younger becomes a Bar Mitzvah boy 18 days sooner. Because there's only one Adar. So he was actually born 12 days later, but he will reach adulthood 18 days earlier. It's a halachic thing. That's the way it goes. Some things you can't do twice. Why can't you read the Megillah twice? We read the Megillah twice, so you read it four times. It's a great story. You can't have a Fabrengen, you can't have a meal. Have a meal. You can't give gifts to the poor. Give gifts to the poor. What's wrong? So we don't even know, we haven't even established whether Purim is celebrated once or twice. It's not a question of push it off. Yes, push it off. We need to first know that Purim is going to be celebrated once a year. And then we can decide when that once of the year is. And the Sfasema says that's exactly what happens here. The first thing he says is we have to establish that the Chol Shana Zman Echod Lehem. There's one time for them. There's one time for them. And it's very interesting because the Rashba, in his commentary, he says, would Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yossi say that if you didn't read the Megillah in the first Adar, do you read it in the second Adar? And the Rashba says, no, you wouldn't. If you missed reading the Megillah in the first Adar, according to Rabbi Eliezer ben Yossi, which is not the halacha, you miss Purim. If you missed Purim in Adar, are you read it on the 14th day of Nisan? No, you missed it. It's done. So in other words, first thing we need to establish is that the celebration of Purim is always one day a year. You always have kol shana v'shana. Every year there is one Purim. Ah, okay. Now that we got that straight, so we know there's one day of Purim, now we have the problem, is it the first Adar or the second Adar? So the Gemara says, no, actually, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi makes perfect sense. Mistaber taima. It makes perfect sense. Why? Hey, mavirin ala mitzvahs. You have a mitzvah. It's called Purim. The 14th of Adar is here. Well, we'll do it next month. What are you doing? Hey, mavirin ala mitzvahs. Go ahead. Celebrate Purim. It makes perfect sense. So the Gemara says, funny. It actually does make sense. So in that case, my timer, the Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. What is the reason for Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says, well, mismach geula legeula. We want to make, you don't have interruptions. We're going to celebrate redemption. We want to go from one redemption to the next redemption. We're going to be on a roll here. We're going to go from the geula of Purim to the geula of Pesach. From Nisan, from Adar straight into Iyar. Rashi says, geula le geula, what's redemption to redemption? Purim le Pesach. Purim le Pesach. So the obvious question that we have to ask ourselves is, one second. We didn't even finish going through the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, but one second here. We have this biblical principle, or so it seems, that you have a mitzvah, you have to seize the mitzvah. We just learned it. It's a mechilta. Rashi says it's a mechilta. If it's a mechilta, if it's an exposition, if it's what the Torah says, u'shmartem es ha-matzot, it means u'shmartem es ha-mitzvot, what do you mean, mismach gula l'gula? What does that even mean? How do you go against something which is a biblical principle? So very interestingly, the Gemara therefore goes on to say furthermore, Rebbe Eliezer Lazar Amar, time of the Rebbe Shimon ben Gamliel, the reason is, B'shun d'ksiv l'kayei mesigeret ha-purim hazot ha-shenit. Mordechai said, to fulfill this second letter. V'in says, because he says the second letter, so therefore we know it means the second letter is also a reference to, Rashi says, b'chodesh ha-sheni. Now the Sif Sirchom wants to suggest that these are two different answers. But in my humble opinion, the way I understand it, and many other Mefarshim say, that it doesn't have to be two different answers. I mean, my simple question would be, if it's a different answer, usually Gemara says, v'iboyeseima, and if you want this answer, and if you want another answer. The Gemara does not say it as two answers. It seems to me, and again, many Mefarshim learn it this way, everybody except the Siv Zichon learns it this way, that the answer of mismach geula legeula is insufficient. You actually need both answers. You need this business of making one geula next to the other geula, and you need to have this reference in the Megillah itself that emphasizes the second, not the first. And you can see that in the Gemara. So the Gemara says right away, oh, so why do we need two reasons for? So the Gemara says, v'itztrich lemichtav hashenit, you have to write number two, and you also have to write the concept of itzrich. We now turn the page to Dav Zayin. Leitzrich lemichtav b'chol shana v'shana. You have to have the limud of on an annual basis every year, which Rabbi Eliezer understands to be connected, which Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel understands to be Adar has to go into Purim, has to go into Pesach. Pardon me. Purim goes into Pesach. Adar goes into Nisan. That's the way he understands it, and that's the meaning of annual. And he says, in addition, you need to have this business of Hashenit. Why, he says? The im b'chol shana v'shana, if you just say annual, hava mina, then I would think, if you only have this nekuda, if you only have this point of you must do it on an annual basis, so I would think, ki kushyan kamashmalan, that the reason that you had to say this was that on an annual basis means following Shvat. And why? Because we shouldn't pass over a mitzvah. So the Gemara itself is saying that the idea of not passing over a mitzvah is extremely prominent and relevant even according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. So annual is not enough. In addition to the idea of annual, kamash malon hashenit. So he said, in that case, why don't you just write the shenit? So he says, hava min, I would think, betchila ba'adar rishon. And maybe also v'gam b'sheni. Maybe the novelty here is you have to have two Purims. Not just the first Purim, but the second Purim too. Kamash malon, the Torah says, no, the Megillah says, not two Purims, but one Purim. So let me explain a little bit here. Let me explain a little. First of all, I'm just going to read the Gemara to you as the Ritva explains it. And with Hashem's help, I'm going to explain. It's all going to make perfect sense to you. And if I won't, you stop me. Okay, or online, you ask a question if it doesn't make sense. The Ritva, in his commentary, he says that according to Rabbi Eliezer Reb Yosef, it makes sense. Mistaber means lemidrash krahochi. It makes sense to expound on the verse in this fashion. It makes sense. Why? Because he says, you said it has to be annual. Fine. Misayeya Allah taima de mavirin ala mitzvahs. Fine. Annual, once a year, it makes sense not to pass over Adar. Adar is here. Celebrate Purim. It makes sense. Upirshu ba'alma, she'im bo le'yodei beiz mitzvahs. If two mitzvahs come your way, yatchil ba'osa shabatchila. And we learn this, he says, from a famous Gemara that describes in Masechet Yuma, the cleaning of the golden altar from the ashes, as well as the preparing of the menorah. Now, when you enter into the Heichal, the first thing you encountered was the small golden altar. The menorah was set back further. It's further west, due west. Actually, it was southwest. So the menorah was, if that's where you came first you clean the mizbeach, don't walk by a mitzvah, and then you went to the menorah, even though preparing the menorah was considered to be a more prominent avodah, a more significant service than just cleaning the ashes of what was left over. And the Gemara discusses this. The Gemara says the reason we don't pass by a mitzvah. Paga bereisha b'mizbeach. You met the mizbeach first, then that's what you met, that's what you do. But he says, that's with two mitzvot. We have another example in the Gemara that tells us if you can perform a mitzvah here and now, don't go further. And this is the source for it. And this answers, by the way, the question of the Tosfos asks over here. He says, there's a Gemara, Menachos says like this. On the second day of Pesach, in the land of Israel, at the time of the Beit HaMikdash, there would be a harvest of the firstling barley. And there would be a special meal offering brought on the second day of the Pesach holiday, and it's called Korban HaOmer, the Omer offering. The Omer offering would initiate a count, a 49-day count called counting the Omer. When we're finished counting the Omer, we celebrate Shavuot. And then we bring a Minchat Bikurim, a firstling offering of wheat, because barley ripens much more quickly than wheat. So the wheat ripens 7 weeks later. And this is a lot to do with the festivals in for the Jewish people being very much agriculturally related, or related to the agricultural cycle of Eretz Yisrael, of the land of Israel. Now, where did they grow the finest barley? Where was the ripest barley? Probably up north. I'm guessing probably up north. You know why I'm guessing that? Because there was a valley known as Ginusar. It was an extremely fertile valley. Until today, the most fertile produce and fruits in the land of Israel grows in the north central part of Israel in a valley called Ginusar, exactly as it's described in the Mishnah. But that's not where they take the wheat from, the barley from. Where'd they take the barley from? They took the barley from the fields just outside of Jerusalem. Do you know what the name of the fields were? You do. You're just not putting two and two together. It was called Beit Lechem, in English known as Bethlehem. Why was Beit Lechem called Beit, the house of Lechem, bread? Because there was fields where there was copious amounts of crops, specifically wheat and barley, grown in these fields. These are the closest wheat and barley fields to Yerushalayim. And as such, our sages tell us, why did you take the Omer cutting from Beit Lechem? Why not go somewhere more fertile, where you could get better grade? If it ripens sooner, it would be drier. And the answer is, because we don't want to pass by a mitzvah. Ein ma'avirin lahaniach hakoro v'leil cherokoch. We're not going to leave what's close and go to somewhere far away. So the Ritva says, we can see it's not only a question of favoring one mitzvah over the other mitzvah. It's when you have an opportunity, Seize the opportunity. And this answers the question of the thesis, automatically deals with the thesis question. The question is, what is Reb Shimon ben Gamliel's opinion then? This seems to make perfect sense. So the Ritva says, the hakra loydayakachi. He doesn't look at the verse shana shana in the same way. Why? Because to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, it was clear the kasover mismach geulas adar legeulas nisan. Now, Rashi, very interestingly, says Purim and Pesach. The Ritva doesn't say Purim and Pesach. He says Geulat Adar leGeulat Nisan. Pardon me. The Geula of Adar to the Geula of Nisan. The Geula of Nisan is Pesach. The Geula of Adar is Purim. Okay. So why does Rashi say Purim and Pesach? And he says Hilkach, he Hanitenis Lamidashachi. Therefore, he expounds it in this way. So here is what I figured out. First of all, I want you to know that according to many opinions, this idea of not passing over a mitzvah is not actually biblical. It's not min haTorah. It's rabbinic. How do I know that? I know that because in the 13th century, there was a great sage whose name was Rabbeinu David ben Zimra, also known as the Radvaz. He's an amazing man. He was on his way to Israel. I think it was in the 60s or something, and he came across Libya or Algeria, and he found the Jewish community didn't know which way is up. So we got stuck there for a few decades. But his goal was to get to Jerusalem. But then eventually, once he established a thriving Yiddishkeit, then he finally got to Jerusalem. And Hashem gave him very long years. I think he died, he was over 100 years old in those days. Anyway, Reb David ben Zimra wrote an enormous amount of responsa. He also wrote commentary in many books of the Rambam. So here is one of the responsa that he wrote. He got the following question. He says, a friend asked, what happens if the tefillin, you listening, Yitzi, got mixed up in the bag, and the person reached in, and the first of the tefillin he took out was not the hand tefillin, but rather the head tefillin. What do you do now? Do you put the head tefillin down, or do you put the head tefillin on and then put in the hand tefillin? You're going to say, well, what's the problem? Well, it's not so pashut. Because the Torah says, "Ukshartem la'ota yedecha." First, you'll tie it on your hand, and then you'll put it on your head. Then it will be on your head. And the Gemara says, whenever it's on your head, you always have two tefillins, not one tefillin. Two batim, two boxes. So the Radvaz says, according to Rashi, I have to say, it would seem that you should put on the headphone. By the way, some people pass like this. But the Radvaz says, I'm pretty sure the Rambam does not view it that way. And not only is the Rambam shita different, but in fact, many other Rishonim dispute this. But it's a biblical thing. Isn't it a biblical thing that you don't pass over a mitzvah? So he says that the Balei HaTosfos and Rabbeinu Haigoin from earlier all said that even if you have the head tefillin first, nonetheless, you have to put on the hand tefillin and only afterwards the head tefillin. Now, ideally, he says, they say you should put the head tefillin in first. In those days, they had these long tubes. Put the head tefillin on the bottom and the hand tefillin on the top. So when you reach in, what tefillin do you get first? The hand tefillin. But if you didn't do that, you still put on the hand tefillin first. So he says, what do you mean? It's a biblical thing. Says the Radvaz, nearly, b'taymei shel davar, it seems to me that this business of ein ma'avirin ala mitzvot is not actually min haTorah. He says it's only an asmachta. It's only based or buttressed by a verse in the Torah. However, in the Torah, it clearly states, put on the hand tefillin first. Ukshartem la'ot al yadecha. You will bind them as a sign upon your hands, and only afterwards, v'hayu l'tatofet b'einecha. So it says first put on the handle, and that's biblical. That's biblical. You got to do that. And a mavir nala mitzvah, says the Radvaz, is midrabanan. It's a rabbinic teaching. It's not a biblical teaching. Asmachuha b'mechilta miyushmartim es hamatzas. The rabbis buttressed that rabbinic teaching by virtue of a creative reading, an elegant reading of ushmartim es hamatzas. Like the Malbim says, that you read the matzah, it's not just you're changing a word matzah for mitzvah. That you see the matzah as the Pillsbury doughboy of mitzvahs. You're seeing it as the paradigm of mitzvahs. It's just with the matzah, you see it the most overtly. And he says, therefore, because of that, you have to tie the hand film first. That's what the Radvaz says. The Vaz elaborates also, he says, it could be that you can say even further, it could be that the time that the head film, the time didn't even arrive, because it says when you wear the head film, you have two pairs of film. And as such, the time to put on a head film only happens after you put on the head film. So it's not even Mavir on Allah mitzvahs. So it's not even. Now, there's another intruder from the Radvaz, in a different section of the Shulchan Aruch, totally different kind of question. This is in Chelek Aleph. It's responsa number 529. But here, in responsa 13 in the fourth section, which is the 1087th responsa, he says, we have a question. Some guy named Reuven, poor hapless fellow, got himself arrested, and he finds himself incarcerated now. And he can't do any mitzvahs. Can't pray with a quorum, can't daven with a minyan, can't do mitzvahs. He pleaded with the commander, with the governor, the hegman, the tsar, he says, and they refused to listen to him. They told him, you can have one day a year to do your religious things. This is not like the prison system in Canada where there's religious freedom. No religious freedom. No exceptions. One day a year, that's all you get. So the man sent a shaila, and he said, what day of the year should I choose? Good question. So the Advaz writes, I saw one of the great wise people, great sages of the generation, write something, and in my humble opinion, he's making a terrible mistake. Said he went diving and came up empty-handed. He's referring here to Chacham Tzvi, who was in Amsterdam, great sage of Ashkenaz. And he says, I don't agree with him. He wrote that if you have one day a year, it should be Yom Kippur, Yom Kippurim, or maybe Purim. Imagine that. Yom Kippurim or maybe Purim. Those are the 2 days he wrote. And he says that's because you have the Megillah and you have Parsum and Nisa. And you can't have it without that. However, he says, in my opinion, what I believe is that there's a business of Ein Ma'aviran ala mitzvahs. You don't pass by mitzvahs. And the Torah doesn't make a difference in big mitzvahs and small mitzvahs. And he says, a mitzvah that comes to your hand, you got to grab what comes your way. To be a big mitzvah, to be a little mitzvah, he says, you take what comes to hand. In other words, what would the answer be? Which day should he get out of prison to daven with a minion? Which day? The first one he gets? You're passing over today's Amin Yehesh Merabah for a Mikra Megillah? For a Kol Nidre? You have a day now, grab the day. So on one hand, he said, it's just rabbinic, on one hand. On the other hand, the Advaz says it's a very serious thing. It's a very serious thing. It's a big deal. We don't weigh whether it's a bigger or smaller thing. So what's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel then? This seems very clear. Even if it's not biblical, it's nonetheless a very powerful thing. And what's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? Why is he pushing you off to the second Adar? So first of all, with regard to this business that it's not biblical, so when I looked in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, I saw clearly in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch that he rules in the same fashion of the Radvaz, that Ein Ma'avir Ala Mitzvahs is rabbinic. In chapter 25 in the Alter Rebbe's Shulchan Aruch, it says like this. You should first put on the hand tefillin, and afterwards put on the head tefillin. The im paga bishal reish tchila, what if your hand reached by mistake for the head tefillin first? Ya'avar al oto mitzvah, pass over the mitzvah, he says. V'yaniach shal yad tchila, put on the hand first. Why? He says, kivan shekadimat shal yad l'shal rosh hu min ha-Torah, because hand first and head second is min ha-Torah. Sha'arei b'tchila nemar ukshartem le'ota yadecha v'achakach le'totafot. Lefikach, he says, because it's biblical, ein mashgichen al havarat ha-mitzvot. We don't pay attention to the business of passing over a mitzvah. So you see clearly from the Alter Rebbe, the reason is because it's biblical. That's why we don't pay attention. So it's like what the Radva says. He doesn't say it clearly. He doesn't say it's rabbinic. But it's obvious from the Alter Rebbe's words that it must be that he doesn't hold it's biblical. That's in chapter 25. And then when you go forward to chapter 28, subsection 8, the Alter Rebbe says like this. When you put the tefillin away, tzarech lizor la'anichem, you have to make sure to put it in the way that you're going to put it on. So you shouldn't touch the head tefillin first. Because if you touch the head tefillin first, what are you going to have to do? You're going to have to pass over a mitzvah. Shelo yitztarech lavan al mitzvah. Shouldn't pass over the mitzvah. Lilbul shegat tchila. V'lochein, therefore, he says, Minaroi, if you ask me, get yourself a long cylinder and put your tefillin inside that way. So that the head tefillin will be underneath and the hand tefillin will be on top. And that way, kishabal litlon, yipoga tchila b'shal yad, when you open the box, the case, your hand is going to reach first for the hand tefillin.
So the case is not right when it goes side by side.
So our bags are usually side by side. So in side by side, the international rule is that the hand tefillin go on the left side and the head tefillin go on the right side. So when you open a bag of tefillin, you always reach instinctively for the left. Because otherwise you're going to have to pass over a mitzvah. So we see the Alter Rebbe says, even though the head tefillin are considered holier, they have four separate portions, four separate parchments, nonetheless, we see that ultimately you still have to have, we'll do whatever is possible, you shouldn't have to pass over a mitzvah. But if you do have to pass over a mitzvah, then you pass over a mitzvah. So how do we understand Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? And what's the answer? Mismach gula legula. Because gula has to flow into another gula. What does that even mean? Where does that come from? What does it mean? How does it override this concept of emavir ala mitzvahs? Oh, and by the way, why doesn't Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi, why doesn't he agree with that? What doesn't he agree with that for? So, I happened to, in a previous class, speak about a fascinating letter from the Rebbe. And a talk from the Rebbe, and I went back to what I just had learned, and all of a sudden something clicked, and I want to suggest in Yiddish we call it a shtickel chiddush. This is I could be wrong by the way. This is only my own personal idea. It may not be correct, but this is what I want to suggest. With this preface, so there's a letter from the Rebbe, what is one of his pastoral letters that was sent to the Jewish people wherever they may be. Written on the Rebbe's 71st birthday, Yud Aleph Nisan, 1973, Tav Shalom Gimel. And the Rebbe talks about miracles. And he says that there are two kinds of miracles. Both are called miracles. One is open miracles. The other is miracles that are camouflaged, concealed. He says the miracles of Yetziat Mitzrayim, Be'otot uvim moftim, with wonders and miracles, and a complete redemption. They leave Egypt behind, a place where they were enslaved for centuries. As the Mechilta says, even a single slave couldn't escape. And then in one day, an entire nation walks out, heads held high, in broad daylight. There's no way to explain that. That's really impossible. So if this thing happened, there could be only one answer. What must that be? It must have been a miracle. It's a miracle. Besides all the plagues and the crossing of the Red Sea, miracle upon miracle upon miracle upon wonder. He says, that's the miracles of Pesach. But then he says, it's the miracles of Purim. And the miracles of Purim, which are a total transformation, it was supposed to be the day of the national yahrzeit of the Jewish people, genocide for all the Jews, turned out to be the greatest victory of all time. A day which was going to be the saddest, most dreary, tragic day, turns into the greatest day of celebration and rejoicing. But the fact is that everything is concealed, camouflaged, all within nature. And as I mentioned, it's about 13 years from Ahasuerus' rise to power to the story of Purim's documentation. It's about 13 years it unfolds. There's a lot of disparate events that seem to have absolutely nothing to do with one another. If Ahasuerus hadn't become the king, if he hadn't gotten in his head this crazy idea that he has to throw this insane party, and if he hadn't decided in his drunken stupor to call upon his wife to do something totally disgraceful, and if she hadn't been the daughter or granddaughter of a king and a princess who looked at him as a stable boy and refused to listen to what he said, and if he hadn't killed her, and the ridiculous way that he chose Esther to become his queen, and that Mordechai happened to be a senator, and he happened to be sitting there, and he happened to be in the Sanhedrin, so he spoke all the languages, and he happened to overhear Bigthan and Teresh plotting this, and everything just happened. Too many coincidences. it's too many coincidences. It can't all be coincidence. It can't be, right? It has to be a miracle. So when you have so many miracles, then you know for sure something extraordinary is going on over here. Somebody is messaging me. David Krohn is asking on Facebook, why do we take off the Rosh Tefillin when we finish davening? That's the answer. That's why, David, because we want to make sure that the head tefillin are always on when we have two pairs of tefillin. So that's where we take it off. It says, Kol zman sheyeh bein einecha, wherever you have them between your eyes, yeyeh shtayim. They're always going to be two. So that's the reason. Anyway, back to the YouTube. And anyway, come from Facebook to YouTube, because that's the screen I keep here. So the story of Purim is like it's a miracle. But the story of Purim only becomes apparent when you string it together in order to realize that it's a miracle. And that's why when people come to Shul, they come like in the middle of the second chapter, and they figure, okay, I'll sit and listen to the second chapter, and then the next Megillah reading, held the first chapter, and I'm done. But actually, they didn't fill the mitzvah. You have to be there from the beginning to the end to hear it in order to fill the mitzvah. Because the mitzvah is to hear the miracle. And the only way you can hear the miracle is if you have the whole story from the beginning. It's one miracle after the next. But none of them is a wow miracle. And then the Rebbe says, within nature, there's two kinds of nature. Every day is miracles. We say it in our davening. Every day Hashem makes miracles. If you open your eyes clearly enough, you will see miraculous things, amazing things happening every single day. But at the same time, the Gemara says you can't say halal every day. You can't say, today is a miracle, I'm making a holiday. Where is the Glen Livet? We're going to celebrate now. Are you sugar? What is that? On Purim, you'll say L'chaim. You can't do it all the time. But it says, on a day like Purim, you have to celebrate. So in other words, within nature itself, the Rebbe said, we wouldn't call it miracle. We would say, wow, that's amazing success. Or how lucky I was, what a mazel. Or that was like a find. I never anticipated this. Or all the other words that people use to attribute extraordinary things happening, like they say that the 11-letter name of God is coincidence. Okay, so that's what the Rebbe talks about in this letter. However, then there's a sicha from the Rebbe, Shabbos Parshas, Shmini, the week after Pesach, and the Rebbe is speaking about the idea of miracles. And he's talking about living in the miracle month of Nisan. Now we're going to leave Nisan. We have to go back to the regular world. And something hit me. The Rebbe says, not miracles. In this Verbrengen, which is 1987, he uses the words Geula. Geula means redemption. Now, redemption usually means to leave something behind. Like, Geula mi Mitzrayim. Being redeemed from Egypt. We left Egypt. We're not supposed to go back there. The Rebbe says, Geula yechayla lias loy rak ba'efenisi. Geula can happen in a way which is not overtly miraculous. Geula can happen. And it's still called Geula. Geula can happen in a way which is still attached to Darkei HaTeva, to nature. Kimoy, for example, the Rebbe says, Hageula de Purim, the Geula of Purim. How do you know it's called Geula? The Rebbe said, how do you know? Look in the Gemara. Our Gemara. The Vav Amud Beis. Mismach Geula, Geula. So I started thinking about this. So one second. So the Rebbe is saying, he's pointing out like a novelty here, that even though Purim comes to an end, that as we say, Akati Avdi D'Achashverosh, now we're still Achashverosh's servants. We didn't go free. We didn't leave anywhere. Nothing changed. Esther remains in the palace, and she's stuck there for the rest of her life. And Mordechai remains at his post, and he's a senator and a prime minister in Persia, not in Jerusalem. So much so that not all of his friends are happy with him. And the Jews remain outside of Israel. Very few Jews went back to Israel. And yet, it's still called Geula. So, this is what I thought. This is just my idea. I could be wrong, but this is what I think. I thought to myself that Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Yossi Haglili, he doesn't look at Purim as a Geula. He says Purim is a miracle. He doesn't see it as a Geula. He doesn't see it as inherently linked to Pesach. So if you don't see it as linked to Pesach, you don't see, there is no mismach geula. One redemption doesn't flow into another redemption. He doesn't see it that way. So if you don't see it that way, naturally, when should you celebrate Adar? When should you celebrate Purim? The first Adar. Eim avir nala mitzvahs. But in the way Rabbi Yishuv ben Gamliel looks at it, he says it is a geula. And because it's a geula, it's not a question of ma'avir nala mitzvahs. Geula should be next to geula. Like the Radvaz says, that the tefillin shel rosh, the time for it is only when the tefillin shel yad's on already. That's when the time for the tefillin shel rosh. So therefore, Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel says it is a geula. Like that's the Rebbe's chiddush. Rebbe's learning this. That's the chiddush of Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel. If you call it geula, then it's already understood. And by the way, this answers the words of Rashi. Question ahead. The Ritva says geulas Adar le geulas Nisan. Rashi simply says Purim le Pesach. Because this is what Rashi is trying to tell us. That Purim and Pesach, whilst they are worlds apart, are still exactly the same. Whilst one is leaving Egypt behind and over the miracles, and the other is remaining exactly in the same place. On Purim, we don't say Hallel. Why? Because we're still Achashverosh's servants. On Pesach is the birth of Hallel. And we say Hallel the night of Pesach. That's the real Hallel, is Pesach. Pesach begins with the Pharaoh saying, Hallelu! Hallelu Avdei Hashem, you're not my servants anymore, you're God's servants. Sing the Hallel. The paradigm of Hallel is Pesach. And Purim is the only holiday that doesn't have a Hallel. And yet, a holiday outside of Israel. And yet, it's still called Geula. So if you look at it as Geula, then its time doesn't come. It's not a question of passing over a mitzvah. Its time hasn't come yet. Its time comes when it's one geula is next to the other geula. That's when the time comes. This is I think the pshat. This helps. This puts it together, and this just it all now it all everything clicks. Everything fits. You see, we have to establish the idea of an annual and the idea of a once a year. And the question is, when should that once a year be? If it's a geula, it should be another sheni. If it's just an event unto itself, that should be in the first Adar Rishon. You don't pass over a mitzvah. Anyway, I could be wrong, by the way. But this is I'm telling you it's my chiddush, not I want to tell you that I said a chiddush. I'm telling you it's my chiddush in case it's wrong. If it's wrong, it's wrong. But this is I think that this is the pshat. And now we can understand something else. Now we can understand that we have the Gemara further buttresses this. And he says, and you can see it even in the way Mordechai wrote to Megillah by right, Igeret HaShenit. Igeret HaShenit. He wanted to emphasize the concept of Shenit. He wanted to emphasize, because the way Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel looks at it, Mordechai wanted to emphasize the idea that Purim is a Geula. It's always going to be close to Pesach. Adar flows into Nisan. You know, there's a halachic opinion that says that just like Adar is mazal, a month with a lot of mazal for the Jewish people, Nisan also is. So the mazal of Adar flows right into Nisan. And it's the birth of Moshe. And Pesach is the birth of the Jewish people. And Moshe Rabbeinu is Yisrael, and Yisrael him Moshe. So the passing of Moshe is observed in the first Adar, but the birth of Moshe is observed in the second Adar, right next to Nisan. That's how it all comes together. So the Gemara comes back and says, so what does it really, as Rabbi Yossi say, if it's a pasuk? Till now it's just theories. But now it's a pasuk, it says Hashem is. What does Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Yossi say? He says, okay, Rabbi Lezer Rabbi Yossi will say to you, hi, Hashem is. This is my Avdei, what we do with it? He says, Miboyulei, the Chidr of Shmuel Bar Yehuda. He needs it for the teaching of Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda. What does Rabbi Shmuel Bar Yehuda say? Betchila, Esther, in the beginning, they only established it in Shushan. In the end, it wasn't just a Shushan holiday, it was a global holiday. So the Pnei Yeshua asks, one second, if you look in the Psukim, it says, V'kiblu ha-Yehudim, the Jewish people accepted it. And that's long before the Igeret HaShenit. And in that case, says the Pnei Yeshua, if they accepted the concept of the Kibbalah Yehudim right away, so how can we say that this doesn't happen until the Jewish people get the second letter? Only then are they accepted upon themselves. So the Pnei Yeshua has a very interesting way of explaining this. He says that the Igeret HaRishon, the first letter, they knew it was Ruach HaKodesh and they accepted it upon themselves. And it was because of Mordechai's command. It was because Ahavat HaNes, all these things. However, he said, they accepted upon themselves as a day of rejoicing. They accepted upon a day of merriment and thanksgiving to Hashem, but they weren't going to read the Megillah. Because the Megillah likes you thumbing your nose at the Gentile enemies. They weren't ready to read a Megillah. They were ready to publicize the story. But Mordechai sent the second letter, and he said, no, guys. You need to do this. Publicize the miracle. That's what the reading of the Megillah is. Publicize the miracle. Publicize it. The whole world should know about it. And they said, okay, fine. So that's the Igeres HaShenis. So that's what, in other words, like this. The question is, why does it say Igeres HaShenit? What does it say that for? So Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is not bothered by that. He says, Rabbi Eliezer ben Rabbi Yossi. He says, it doesn't bother me. I know why he said it. Because in fact, according to at least one opinion, one school of thought, they didn't accept it upon themselves until Mordechai drove the point home with the second letter. And according to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, that's not enough. That's not enough. The emphasis on Hashenit is clearly coming to drive home and buttress the point of the Mismach Gula L'Gula. So we're not going to take the Sifsechum's approach. We're going to take the other Mefarshim who learn that these are two parts of the same answer, even though they're different names. It's a compounded answer. So the answer begins with the teaching of Mismach Gula L'Gula, the teaching of Rabbi Tovi. And then afterwards, we have an additional teaching that Rabbi Eliezer says, the time of Rabbi Shimon is L'Kayim and Segeris HaPurim Azeis. And now it's like a compounded together, brings the full thrust of the answer. And now we understand, really, difference in the first Adar and the second Adar. Now there's a fascinating Chatam Sofer. He points out that the first Adar is the extra month, not the second Adar. And the Chatam Sofer points it out because he says, if you look at the month of Adar, Adar is always 29 days. But he says the leap month is always 30 days. So that's the stranger. That's the outlier. And he says, because that's the stranger, the outlier, so Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, to begin with, had footing to say, you want to say don't pass over mitzvahs. Shimon ben Gamliel says, I don't even know if that's like Adar. That's just an extra month. That's what he wants to say. It's a little bit hard to understand that because at the end of the day, it's Nisan we want to make on time in the spring, not Purim. Right? But he wants to say, and he has a strong proof from his proof of 30 days. But at any rate, he, so to speak, mitigates the pressure on Shimon ben Gamliel to say Passover the first. So I guess you can add it in as part of the logic of why Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel is prepared to pass over the concept of Ma'avirin ala mitzvahs and instead to focus on the Mismach Geula L'Geula, which to him is very clear and compelling. And I think that the lesson that we take away from this, you know, called it scripted in the stars. It's all It's all about the zodiac. It's all about the stars or the heavenly bodies. But it's scripted into, you know, like the proverbial star of Moshe, the birth of Moshe, which is in Adar, which leads ultimately to the Geula of the Jewish people, and the birth of the nation of Israel, and the first month. This is really all about the Geula of one Geula leading into another Geula. That's really what it's scripted into. And once you have it scripted in that way, so it doesn't matter. The business of Eim Aviron doesn't apply because its time simply hasn't come. Just because the month is called Adar doesn't mean that its time has come. Its time will come when we're ready to go from one Geula into the next. And that, my dear friends, is all she wrote for tonight. So, thank you for joining us. And I hope that from all of our talk about Geula, that we will merit the ultimate Geula to the coming of Mashiach. Thank you for joining. Thank you guys for being here. Shkoyach. Thank you everybody online for being here. Please share. And please spread the word. Help support what we're doing so we can get the messages of Torah and inspiration to make our world a better place. And if you haven't yet, please subscribe and make sure you enable notifications. Shkoyach! Thank you for joining. Laila Tov. Surot Tovot Kol Tov.